Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome to an adventure in history. We are once again so glad you're taking the time to listen to us on KMUN, our favorite local radio, or podcast.
Or podcast.
Whatever your favorite podcast is, Apple, Spotify, or KMUN.
Are we the most popular podcast ever now?
Well, there's a lot of them out there now.
Maybe there's some ahead of us. there might be a couple.
I mean, but how many record in drunk tanks?
You know,
sober. Sober, by the way.
I think if we checked into that, there'd probably be a couple others.
You think so?
I mean, come on, in this day and age.
Okay, well.
It probably is. Although we should find them. We could form a club.
Who aren't incarcerated then.
That's true.
Yes, but you're.
Do incarcerated people, are they allowed to have like a podcast?
They are. They cannot make money off of or if they do, like often like the money would have to go to their victims.
Somehow that feels wrong.
Right.
That they could have a podcast.
Well, they do. I mean, you've heard about people that are incarcerated writing books.
Although, as
right?
I say, although it'd be nice that they're doing something productive.
Yeah.
Although is a podcast productive?
Let's ask our guest. Is a podcast productive?
Sounds like it is today.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
see,
there we go.
I like him already.
That's
a lot.
Nathaniel Ward. We're going to introduce him more in a little bit. But to get going, I have common phrases and where they came from.
Okay. And am I guessing or are you just reading?
Oh, yeah. Let's guess. Okay. To Josh.
To Josh?
Yeah.
Okay. It's got to be somebody named Josh.
Yes.
And he was somebody who was easily fooled.
Let's see. Okay. Josh Billings was one of America's most celebrated humorists. He lived from 1818 to 1885. His writings were sharp, humorous, and witty, and he frequently mocked the going on of public officials, high society, and bigwigs in general. He was the first American humorist to become a best-selling author, and his name was known in every household. Is that maybe an exaggeration? I don't know.
Well, maybe.
So widely read was Billings that it became the practice to say to Josh instead of to joke.
The other side of what I guessed.
Yeah. Joshing.
Wow. Just joshing around.
Joshing around. Yeah.
And you know, back then it was a smaller population. So it was possible for somebody to have like 100% market
share. 1818 to 1885, at least of the documented market share, right?
Yeah.
For sure.
All right. So the history highlights, as always, icebreakers, things to talk about around the dinner table, things that happen tomorrow, August 25th, 1768. Captain James Cook departs from Plymouth, England, bound for the Pacific Ocean on his first voyage aboard the Endeavour.
Fun. Good.
There's a lot there with Cook.
Yes. You like talking about.
I kind of do, just because where he got killed became a tourist spot really early.
Sure. And his name's fun, Captain Cook.
That's true. All right. 1814, British forces destroy the Library of Congress containing 3,000 books. Boo hiss.
No, it makes my heart hurt.
Yeah. 1921, Franklin D. Roosevelt, age 39, is diagnosed with polio.
Yeah.
39. That always just kind of strikes me.
It was a big deal, right? Because at the time, adults weren't getting polio.
Exactly. That's why 39.
Right. It was children and children and young adults. But it did strike and he never did walk again.
Never fully recovered. He was good at fooling people, though.
Right.
And a time period where the media actually respected. It wasn't a secret secret. They just never filmed. Or never reported that he was being helped or that he was the leg braces or anything like that. Can you imagine today the media
ignoring
something like
that? I mean, can you also imagine if we had known and been able to respect it, right? Here is somebody in a very high position of power that had a disability and he had to hide it.
I don't think in that time period they would have respected that.
Right. I mean, I don't know that they would now either.
Because they talk about how vibrant he was.
Right.
You know, effervescent and running around and doing things. So,
but yeah, that's tough. Right.
1939, The Wizard of Oz opens in U.S. theaters.
I saw that.
I'm still frightened by the flying monkeys.
It's all quite scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
How did that become a kid's movie?
Wicked? Are you a Wicked? I know you're a Wicked fan.
I am. That was the first musical I ever saw.
Really?
Where'd you see it?
In Portland.
Wow.
Yeah. My aunt and uncle took me. And
since my goal is to get him to sing on the radio today. Because I know that
good luck.
I know that he could do it. But that's the first one. Okay, interesting.
All right. 1944, Paris is liberated after 4 years of Nazi occupation. Good for them. 1958, Momofuku Ando, I'm sure I'm not saying that name correctly, so apologies, sir, creates the first mass market instant ramen.
I saw that one.
I thought about making that the history highlight of the day.
It's huge.
Because it is huge, especially right. For college students everywhere.
And then the origin, go on to tell the reason. I mean, I guess I should have guessed this, but I wouldn't have guessed that this was the reason.
Do you want to talk about
it? No, you go ahead.
I don't have it.
Oh, you don't? Well, it was to address a food shortage crisis in Japan after World War II. So the inventor and businessman, he developed the ramen to be the first ever instant noodles that were shelf stable. Right? I mean, they're shelf
forever.
Stable for, that's what I was going to say, forever and ever. So August 25th, 1958. They're readily available. Takes 2 minutes to cook. It fills hungry bellies. It doesn't have a lot of nutrients in it, of course, but it does have a lot of flavor and sodium and then some calories, of course. So
what always grossed me out when I was doing the scouting thing, scout leader thing, and I refused to build a fire for the kids if they couldn't build the fire. They were just going to go hungry.
Right. Oh.
Because it's just overnight. I mean, okay, you can have a few snacks and you'll survive tomorrow until you get home. Other leaders, you know, didn't get used to that. It took a while for them to realize I shouldn't just start the fire and do it for them. But at least half a dozen times I can picture where they couldn't get a fire started and they would eat like raw ramen noodles. It was just so gross. It was disgusting.
But that had to have been a skill you taught them, how to make a fire.
If they listen, if they pay attention.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. In the Pacific Northwest, it's not easy when everything's wet. All right. But our history highlight of the day thing I think had the most impact on history, 1916, the U.S. Department of Interior forms the National Park Service.
Ooh.
We love the National Park Service.
We do love the National Park Service, yes. And it remains in the Department of the Interior.
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think a lot of people often wonder if it's Department of Agriculture or Forestry, but nope, Department of the Interior is National Park Service.
But National Park Service, taking care of trees and woodland everywhere.
Yes. Ooh, good segue. Just like Nathaniel Ward, who is the owner of Coastal Roots Tree Care, joining us today.
I'm very pleased with myself.
Also a fan
that.
Of national parks.
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Glad you're here. So let's start with where you grew up.
I was born in Seaside at Providence and grew up here. Spent my whole life until I was 18. I graduated from Seaside High School and grew up in the Gearhart area, all in Clatsop County.
So we've had people that have grown up in Seaside and in Astoria. I don't know that we've ever had anybody that grew up in Gearhart.
Ooh, I don't know.
So talk a little bit about, because it's very picturesque and it feels like you could just ride your bike or walk down the streets and feel safe. And did your parents pay attention? Were you allowed to just wander about? And where did you wander about or get up to mischief with your friends?
That's a good question. I think I was on the cusp of a generation. I'm technically Gen Z, but growing up, I was allowed to just be out all day and I had to be back before dark. So my mom's house growing up was on the east side of the highway. So we couldn't really walk on the highway, but my friend lived like three streets down. So there was this area that we could go up in the woods and meet halfway and just kind of play in the trees, play in the woods, and very fitting with what I'm doing now, realizing that I kind of grew up in trees and climbing and very fun stuff. But yeah, riding a lot of bikes growing up, that was a favorite for sure.
And were there tall enough trees that you were climbing as a kid?
You know, when I was a kid, I probably thought so. Yeah, they probably seemed a lot taller than they were, but I was always very adventurous and wasn't afraid to fall and probably have a bit more fear and respect, I guess, of the trees now.
Okay, I'm just picturing, you know, you're really little and 8 feet, but it's a giant tree.
Yeah, that's like a redwood. Yeah.
And really adventurous. So tell us about some of these adventures, because after high school, you took off and left the country.
I did, yep. Growing up in a small town, I couldn't wait to see other countries, other cultures, and I had an opportunity. I did a gap year in England and Austria. I went to a Bible school there and studied the Bible with students from all around the world. So I did that for 1 year, came back and I studied in Portland at PCC for about a year. And I had an opportunity actually to work at that same school in Austria as a ski instructor, snowboard instructor. And then during the school, kind of being a mentor to the students going through the same program that I did a few years before. So that was great. I was abroad for about 3 to 4 years total.
Gosh.
Wow. And then March of 2020 happened. There was this big thing. The world kind of shut down. I don't know if you guys have heard about it.
We might do a show on it at some point.
Okay. but yeah, I came back to Clatsop County and was working at the same coffee shop that I had worked at since a kid. It's down in Cannon Beach, and met my former boss there, my mentor, and he told me he was an arborist. And I asked, well, what is that? And he said, oh, I climb trees with a chainsaw. And that was enough information to pique my interest. That
was the selling point.
It really was.
Sales pitch.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, I traveled the world kind of all throughout Europe. I went to the Middle East. I've been to Central America. I still have a lot more. I haven't really been to any Asian countries, but I'd love to visit. Japan's probably at the top of my list right now.
So you say gap year, but it wasn't really a gap year because you went to school.
Yeah.
Right?
It wasn't accredited. It was really just for personal growth and experience, but I call it a gap year. And funny enough, growing up, those were always very not encouraged. It was frowned upon almost to take a year off. It kind of felt like I was going to be a year behind all my friends who started their four-year university. But I realized, not until afterwards, that it really kind of helped put me ahead, because when I was ready to decide what I wanted to do and to invest into a college, I had so much more wisdom and experience from traveling the world and meeting people from different cultures. I didn't feel like I was behind, but ahead.
And you were in Austria.
So, yeah.
Yeah. How did you pick Austria? I mean, how did you end up there instead of somewhere else?
Have you seen The Sound of Music?
Oh.
Are you kidding me? Is that really?
No.
Wow.
That would be great.
He had a very believable look on his face.
He did, yeah.
So there's a local Bible school in Cannon Beach called Ecola, and I had a few of friends that were going there, and I didn't want to stay in town, but I liked the idea of it. And basically, the person who started that school went to a school in England, but it's in a castle in England. And that's really all my friend told me that was enough to sign it up. And I realized that this organization had like 26 around the world. And there was one on a sailboat in Greece that I was very intrigued by.
Oh,
but
goodness.
I decided the one in Austria kind of fit because it was very adventure-based. There's a lot of rock climbing, skiing, hiking, just wandering in the Austrian Alps. So.
And was language a barrier? Did you speak anything local, German or whatever?
I didn't speak German.
Did you have to when you got there?
No. Fortunately, it was an English-speaking Bible school. It was international. But when I worked there, I definitely learned German. The schools were in fall and spring. And in the winter, we had German groups coming for ski weeks. And that was all German-based. So that's how I learned German. I was fluent in ski talk before anything else. So I could tell people kind of to slow down. And the first thing I learned when I was on my snowboard was das war Absicht, which means that was on purpose. So anytime I'd fall, I'd look at my students and they'd say, das war Absicht. I'm like, don't worry, I did that on purpose.
Okay, say in German, the bunny trail is for you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, die langsam ist für dir. I don't know. Yeah.
I have a feeling if I was there, that's what I'd be hearing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. They'd just say, take off your skis and go down.
Yeah. So then 2020 is happening. The world's changing. Did it have to shut down? Were you frightened about being stuck there? What was the purpose in getting or intent in getting home?
Yeah, all of the above.
Okay.
It was crazy. It was during our winter program. So it was a Friday. And on Fridays, we'd do a race for our guests. So we did ski lessons the whole week. And on Friday, we had a little slalom for them. And that morning was super normal. We had a good time. All the instructors would go to a hut afterwards on our way down from the mountain. And we'd get like a hot chocolate or a beer or a Radler. And that was super normal. And our leader, his name is Reiter Andi. He was like the most Austrian man you would ever meet. He said, hey, we're going to have a meeting this afternoon. Meet us in the bistro. And so super normal morning that afternoon, they said, you guys need to go now. You need to cross the border. The border to Germany is closing tomorrow afternoon or something like that. So it was just a total night and day switch where, yeah, we had to get out of there. My first thought was spring school was going to be starting 6 weeks after that. And I thought, okay, this is going to pass. Maybe I could just hang out in the Austrian Alps for 6 weeks before the spring school starts and kind of finish my time here. So that was a plan for a few days. And then
your mom was like, what are you thinking?
She was the voice of reason where it was like, you should probably come home. This is, I think, bigger than you think it's going to be. And I'm really glad I did, because that gave me time to reintroduce myself into our culture here, because that's not an easy process after you spend so long time away, and it was honestly a really amazing place to be when we were on lockdown, to be right on the beach. And I remember the day the beach closed, I was surfing, and I got back and I saw the sign that said beach is closed, and I was like, what? But yeah, it was just a really special time. Hard, but I'm glad I was back home with family, and it helped kind of go through that.
So how much time did you actually have when you get here? I mean, because for a while the airports were kind of closed for international travel. So did you get in with weeks to go, or was it days?
It was within days. Yeah. So because the fear was everything was going to be closing down, so I didn't get stuck. I was able to find a flight from Salzburg to London and then stayed the night in Heathrow and then flew back home. I was in Dallas and back home. It was a kind of funny story. I feel bad now. That was before we knew the symptoms of COVID. And we were right on the border of Italy, and which is, I think, one of the first spots it came to when it was in Europe. And people were sick probably 2-3 weeks before we knew what was going on. And I was at Fort Worth and I had just turned 21. It's like, I'm going to try some beers. So I was in the airport and I got a whole flight of beers, and I had my first one, which was like a lager, tasted it. It was bitter. It didn't taste like anything. I was like, gross. So then I had an IPA. It's like, this is going to taste different. Tasted exactly the same. It was just bitter and gross, and it didn't taste like anything. Then I had a stout. It tasted exactly the same.
Oh,
and I realized I didn't have any taste or smell. But then I didn't realize until months later that that was one of the symptoms for COVID. So I might have been the reason it came to the States.
You're the one that brought it here.
I'm confessing here on
brought
on
it to Seaside.
Breaking news. So I was interested that you just said the kind of decompressing or learning how to live here again. Talk a little bit about that culture change what habits did you get into that you had to break, or what was it?
Reverse culture shock is kind of slept on in the sense that people don't really think about it much. They think about going to a new culture, having to learn new things. But yeah, little things like the light switches or the flush on the toilet, everything's different. And so those little things that you don't realize, that you just kind of change your
habits.
Yeah, everyday habits. And also the big community aspect. I was living in this tight-knit community with my friends. We'd go skiing, and it was just learning how to live back in Clatsop County, I think, was harder than expected. But I had so much time, and it's a good question. I haven't thought about it much.
My daughter spent a year teaching English in Japan, in rural Japan, and she had the same thing when she came back. And they actually, the group that she, the organization she went with, they encourage any of the kids from the Pacific Northwest to get together and kind of help each other through it. But just little things. I mean, she'd take her shoes off automatically whenever she walked into a building, and
people
were like, what are you doing?
I think one thing, a little more about how the culture acts and interacts with each other there. They're a very direct culture, so if there's something wrong, they'll say it. So I had a German roommate that would just be like, I don't like it when you leave the window closed, we need to open the window. But it's like the middle of winter in the Austrian Alps, and it's really cold. And he said, it doesn't matter, like, we need fresh air. So I learned to be okay with that direct, because I didn't realize it was them being rude. It was them communicating, and that was the opposite of how I used to communicate. So I became a lot more direct and realized my friends here responded how I did originally. So ultimately, I think it made me a lot clearer and better of a communicator, but I just needed to learn how to take what I learned in other cultures and integrate it into here at home.
And okay, go ahead. No. Well, I was going to say it, and at some point too, then you started the next transition into a career. So you were at Sea Level Coffee and introduced to arbor care or taking care of arbors. Was it? Yeah.
Treescapes Northwest.
Treescapes
Northwest.
Yeah.
So Jeff Gerhardt was my mentor, or is my mentor and former boss. And that was a big transition, but I was looking forward to it. I was thinking about trying something, contracting or construction, plumbing, something to just do with my hands. And I didn't know that arboriculture was even a thing. And I'm really thankful. I mean, that in a lot of ways kind of saved my life and just projected me, little did I know, into a whole career and starting my own business someday, and just a perfect job for myself and my interests.
Outside, climbing trees.
So describe the first time you climbed a tree with a chainsaw, since that was the sales pitch.
Yeah, it took, a little bit of time. Thankfully, I had experience in rock climbing when I was in Austria, so I knew kind of the ropes, if you will, literally, and the knots to right.
No.
Yeah. Working for my boss, he basically, the first step was to put all of the gear on, feel how heavy it is and weight, but then you just slowly introduce yourself and have a little handsaw, and I had to do my cuts and learn the ropes first, and then I could introduce the chainsaw, because the thing is, if you're 80 feet up in a Sitka spruce, you're safe because you have 2 points of ropes that you're always supposed to have before you use a chainsaw. But you also have a chainsaw, and if you do one false movement, you're going to cut those ropes and you're on the ground. So you really have to be super focused and double, triple check every time. But yeah, just it took, you know, every day training a little bit, and eventually I learned to trust my gear more and trust my mentor and know that it can be safe if you have an attitude of safety.
Yeah. So then you decided to start your own business.
Yeah. Jeff, my former boss, was a big help with that. He was kind of hinting at it for a while, and I was doing school online. I was at George Fox studying business, and I said, Jeff, maybe after I graduate, I don't know if I want to have my own business. I love to travel. I don't, you know, like having something tying me here. And little did I know that that was exactly what I needed to do to have that flexibility. And he basically, after hinting at it, kind of slammed it in my face and said, hey, you can't work for me until you get your license. And kicked me out of the nest, teach me how to fly. And he said, but once you get your license, I'll hire you as a subcontractor, or you can start having your own clients. And he really helped me along the way and still does. Just this morning, I was looking at a large Sitka spruce with a codominant stem that needs a cable. And that's something that he's really good and knowledgeable about. So he came to my job site and helped, you know, kind of instruct me and show my clients why it's a good idea. But yeah.
So talk about becoming licensed. What goes into that? What kind of things do you have to know?
It's a lot of steps, but it's actually pretty easy. And I'd encourage a lot of people who are just kind of doing little side jobs. It's not too hard to get your license and become legit. There's an LCB, that's what it's called. It's the Oregon Landscape Contract Board. That's where I got my license through. You have to get a personal license and then a business license. And then after that, you just get your insurance, you get everything. And getting the business started is pretty simple. What's difficult is maintaining it and getting your client base. And kind of what my boss said, he said, fake it till you make it, which was good yeah. advice, but just kind of learning to be honest. And I think there's a lot of fear mongering when it comes to arboriculture and saying, oh, that tree is going to fall on your house, we got to take it down, kind of thing. And that's not what I'm into. I don't want to scare people. I want to say, hey, if that tree needs to come down, it needs to. But there's also a lot of ways we can care for it. We can prune it, we can cable it, we can preserve it and try to prevent it from ever falling down. So just being very candid, and honestly, being a contractor is a pretty low bar to do it well. You need to answer your phone calls, and if you don't, call them back. You need to show up when you say you're going to, and those two things really is what it takes to be consistent and have people very pleased with your work.
So I have to ask, what's your favorite tree?
Oh,
I have two.
Okay.
My favorite native species is a Western red cedar. That's what I named my dog after. It's a cedar. It's beautiful. And especially when you see the old growth ones, they're pretty stunning. They smell great too. My tied equal favorite, maybe a little more, is the redwood. The coast redwood specifically. It's actually what I have in my wedding ring right here. It's the Latin is Sequoia sempervirens, which means like the ever living tree. And basically the idea is, you know, when all the humans years ago tried to cut them all down, they would grow up from the stumps. When the floods and the fires come, they continue to grow and they persevere. So having that in my wedding ring as like a symbol of our marriage, just
yeah.
whatever happens, we're going to persevere and continue to grow is pretty cool. So those two are tied.
That is the best answer to my stupid question.
And he knew, yes.
The basic, whatever they're into.
When it gets to my segue,
like
too.
He was prepared for that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He recently got married. And tell us where you got married and what else happened on that day.
Yeah. My wife and I had a little wedding up at Ecola State Park, right on the point. Or right at the viewpoint. And
a little one.
Yeah, a little wedding. We had, you know, about 50 of our friends and family there. But what we didn't know when we were planning it was that it was on the Goonies 40th anniversary. And there were tours up at Ecola. And I think my wife, Teresa, was getting her hair done the week before or something. And her hairdresser was like, you're doing it when? So I was up there stressed. There were thousands of people.
Thousands.
Somehow we found, you know, parking spots for everyone, and I'm just expecting like echoes and echoes of people being like, hey, you guys, and just like during our wedding ceremony. But everyone was super respectful and just stoked, and we ended up having like multiple thousands of people at our wedding. But it was beautiful
at this like dream site for Goonies fans.
What day was it? June 7th?
8th.
Okay. The
yep.
day after.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah. So it wasn't the actual anniversary, but it was the anniversary weekend.
And actually, I think the 8th is when we encouraged and had a guy that used to work there when the Goonies was filmed, was given tours or talks down That's, there.
Yeah, there were so tours happening that day.
It would have been busier on that day than any exactly. of the others.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to watch the Goonies every year on our anniversary now.
But I do like that. And Teresa's not from Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I also think that that's like, okay, well, welcome.
Yep, very much so. But it was beautiful. It was such an awesome ceremony. We had our loved ones. We were able to fly our mom out for it. And I think eventually we'll do another ceremony for all of her family. And yeah, it was very special.
So what's the range of work that you've done? I mean, how far throughout the state or wherever? I mean, are you just Clatsop County or have you had to do something somewhere else?
I've done a little bit, you know, outside of our county. I've gone to some client's house in Portland. I've been to Rhododendron. But I really just, well, honestly, I was in Costa Rica doing tree work there, but that was just volunteer work a few winters ago. I love my county, though, and my little area. So what I say is really, you know, Warrenton to Cannon Beach, but I'll go down to Manzanita. I'll come up to Astoria. So Clatsop County.
That makes sense. Yeah. So when you're not climbing trees or having a wedding during Goonies weekend, what is it that you like to do?
Funny, I still love being in the trees. I love being in the woods, foraging for mushrooms or like edible plants. That's something I love, which the season is starting and will continue through the fall, which is great. My wife and I love just sitting in the sun on the beach. When we have it, we take advantage of it. And we also just got a puppy. So we rescued him from the Warrenton shelter, and he's 9 weeks old. Oh, he's a little pit, and he looks just like our dog Cedar.
Oh.
So we've just been training and kind of getting a taste of what it's like to have a little baby around, hoping maybe a few years down the road we'll have some human children as well, and not just dogs.
Not just fur babies.
Mm-hmm.
So you still have the travel bug, I assume.
Yeah.
And what areas that you mentioned you hadn't been to Asia yet, what things would you like to experience? Where? What would you still like to go to?
This sounds like everyone would agree, but I love food so much. It's one of my biggest passions is culinary. I love to cook, and I love learning about cultures through the food, kind of having that as a lens. So I'd love to do a food tour throughout, you know, any country, wherever. But Japan is definitely top of my radar. That's where my brother would love to go to. So just going and learning about the culinary there, and that's kind of the way I focus my travels, is food based.
All right.
So what food do you miss from your time in Austria?
Oh, good question. The food there's very interesting. You know, we think of like Wiener Schnitzel is like a very Austrian. The bread is amazing. The desserts, there's something called Kaiserschmarrn. And it's basically like scrambled pancakes that they flambiert, like flambe.
Oh, nice.
So it's like scrambled pancakes with lemon sauce and cranberry sauce that just drowsed in sugar. And you have that after a very long hike. And I think I have to say beer, too. Like the beer there is just great.
Okay. In the last 30 seconds, how do people find you?
Yes.
Well, you can find me online at coastalrootstreecare.com. That has all of my contact information there. I have cards. You can call me at 503-440-1059. Yeah, Coastal Roots Tree Care. If you just Google that, or if you see me driving around with my truck, I'm very friendly. Come say hi. You can pet my dogs who are always with me. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. Keep climbing those trees. And we're glad you're in our community. Thanks,
Thank
Nathaniel.
You. Thank you.
All right. Go make some history. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.